Last week we said that the core contributions of men and women from history and the scriptures, we emphasize that word core. We said we're going to talk about core things, that women at their core are nurturers of life. Not that they couldn't do other things, but society and family and you and I are all best when we allow them to be nurturers, okay? So that first blank there in A, women are the nurturers of life. Then we said last week that the Scripture has taught us in 1 Timothy that because of the fall, they were saved or fulfilled by the rearing of children. And that we said that the saved was fulfillment, and the they in that verse was children. And this is why if you have a wife and you have any children, you know that there is something uniquely wonderful and strange to you all at the same time about how she adores, loves, you and I sometimes might say dotes on the children, okay? And you and I sometimes, as men, because that's not our nature, that's not at our core, we sometimes have fantasies about the day and the time when the children leave. Right? We think about that and we go, yay! And she just goes, oh no, not my babies. Right? So, but that what that is that's a difference at the core of who they are, okay, and who we are. So that's what we said. And then we said that women are happiest not when given positions of power, but when the creative contributions of the maternal role are upheld. And that came to us, that quote, that's a quote from a lady named Margaret Mead, who was an anthropologist who studied human culture and who by herself also was a feminist. But she had discovered that this is what made women happiest. Now, feminists have long agreed with this fact. They think it's something they need to work on and change. But they agree that there are just some women out there who, in their opinion, are just so dull of mind that they just don't want to get out of the home. They don't understand that. So, but at the core, they're happiest. And we said that men are the bearers of destiny. That as men go, so goes the society. So if you as a man have low morals, society will have low morals. If you as a man are willing to lie, cheat, steal, kill to get ahead, then that's the kind of society we're going to have. But if you as a man say, whoa, I'm going to live for a better purpose, a larger purpose, I'm going to be a bearer of destiny, then society will raise too. John Kennedy, I think, is famous for the quote in politics, talking about taxes, about cutting taxes, that a rising tide raises all boats. Okay? Well, in society as men, the higher our standards, the higher our morals, the better the entire society. As men go, so goes the society. And we said that we learned that in Genesis 2 and 3, that the man was created by God with a unique social and spiritual leadership in mind. And that's what we've been talking about most of this year, is the theology from Genesis that teaches us who we are, who we were created to be, and what is our unique role. So we have a social and a spiritual leadership in mind. And then we finished last week by talking about that defection from this leadership spells trouble, not just for the man, but for everyone. When we don't live up to our full potential, it affects everyone. Now, so that's where we are. That's all of the points on number one. Now, number two, we're going to talk about two men and look at their identities. And we're going to start in Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 45. So also it is written that the first man, Adam, became a living soul. And the last man, the last Adam, became a life-giving spirit. However, the spiritual is not first, but the natural, then the spiritual. The first Adam is from the earth, earthly. The second man is from heaven. As is the earthy, so also are those who are earthy. And as is the heavenly, so also are those who are heavenly. Just as we have borne the image of the earthy, we also bear the image of the heavenly. Now, here, you know, anytime you read Paul in Corinthians, you have to read him 6 or 7 times and kind of clear your head and try to follow him again, because Paul is the master of the run-on sentence. Basically, I think 1 Corinthians is one big long sentence and 2 Corinthians is a big long sentence. You know, there's just no paragraphs. You just got to get in there and get with it. But what he's saying there is that there are two men in history whose character affect every other man. The first one is Adam, the first man. And he was kicked out of the garden because he was earthy, of the earth. In other words, he didn't live up to his destiny. He failed. The second Adam, Jesus Christ, did restore manhood. He restored that destiny to us. So Paul the theologian is summarizing these two towering figures in history. The first was a living soul, but the second, he says, was a life-giving spirit. Okay? But he says the spiritual is not the first, but the natural. Then comes the spiritual. Okay? So the earthy, Adam, if that's his, that's how he lived. So Adam and Christ stand over against each other as two great figures at the entrance of two worlds, two creations. Okay, this statement by the theologian Ribberboss there. Okay, Adam and Christ stand over against each other as two great figures at the entrance of two worlds, two creations, the old and the new. And in their actions and fate lies the decision of all who belong to them, because all men are comprehended in them. So in a masculine sense, if we're saying, where do we look for our masculinity? There are two sources, Adam and Christ. Okay? So there be. They are the leaders of two distinct spiritual destinies. Adam and Christ are the leaders of two distinct spiritual destinies. If you're going to follow the first Adam, you're going to be a man of the earth. You get ahead. You might accumulate great wealth. You might accumulate great fame. You might accumulate a lot of things that would cause other men of the earth to look up to you and go, man, I want to be like him. But when you die, you're going to have no eternal significance. But if you follow Christ, it's a whole different game. Now, in Romans, there on your listening sheet, it talks about Romans chapter 5, verse 12 through 19. I'm going to read this to you. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered into the world, and that's the first Adam, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sin. Okay? Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam unto Moses, even over all those who had not sinned in the likeness of the offense of Adam, who is a type of him who was to come. But the free gift is not like the transgression, for if by the transgression of the one the many died, much more did the grace of God and the gift by the grace of the one man, Jesus Christ, abound to many. So, grace and truth come from Christ, and sin and death come to us through Adam. I'm going to skip down to verse 17. For if by the transgression of the one death reigned through the one, much more those who receive the abundance of grace and of the gift of righteousness will reign in life through the one, Jesus Christ. So then, as through one transgression there resulted condemnation to all men, even so through the act of one act of righteousness there resulted justification of life to all men. For as though the one man's disobedience the many were made sinners, even so through the obedience of the one many were made righteous. So what we have here is the spiritual destiny. Jesus gives us the opportunity to go to heaven through grace. Adam gave us the opportunity to go to hell through sin. And I don't care who you are, how great you are, if you want to think that you know better than God, the proverb that there is a way that seemeth right to a man, but the end is death, that's going to apply. That's going to be a rule over your life. You're going to always think you know best. You're going to work hard, and it's always going to turn to crap in the end. That's the destiny of our father Adam. The spiritual destiny of Christ is everything you do may look to be idiocy to others, because Jesus is leading you in a different way that to your own self, even your own nature, sometimes you go, I don't get this, Lord. I don't want to do that, Lord. But if you're obedient and you do it anyway, in the end, you're going to have a great eternal destiny. So they are leaders of two distinct destinies spiritually. But also see, they are the leaders of two distinct masculine destinies. Two distinct masculine destinies. When it comes to manhood, you can go one of two ways. The first Adam represents a manhood that has settled for the natural course. It's finite, it's temporal, it's all about instinct, reason, reaction, the way that seemeth right to a man. Okay? But his manhood is the manhood that draws life from others. If you go back and you look at Adam and Eve, Adam thought he was going to get life from Eve. He let her go ahead. He lets her go to that tree. He lets her eat that fruit. He's thinking, hey, she's going to test it for me. Now, God had told him that when you eat of that tree, you're going to die. And if he were a real man, he would have stood over between her and the tree and said, over my dead body will you eat the fruit of this tree. But no, he sends her out as a test. Well, let's see what happens. I wonder if she's going to drop dead immediately. Is she going to bounce a little bit? What's going to happen here? Okay, that's his manhood. All natural. He was so selfish, he was willing to let his wife go commit suicide, and he's going to stand back and watch. So he wasn't somebody who was giving his life away so that his wife could grow. He was someone who was taking life from her so he could see how far is this God thing going to work. How far can we go? Did God really mean it when he said you're going to eat this tree, it's going to cause problems? Okay? In our vernacular, we'd say he was pretty low down, rotten, and no good. Okay, that's his manhood. He lived a manhood with no transcendent meaning. Okay? And that's where Paul gets in Corinthians, what we started off with. He was a living soul. But then he contrasts that with Jesus. Jesus is a life-giving spirit. Jesus came with a heavenly manhood. Okay? Now, he wasn't so heavenly minded, he was no earthly good. But his is a manhood that is based on revelation, not reason. Okay? He was a man under authority. And the authority he was under was the Spirit. Once the Spirit descended on Jesus in the beginning of his ministry, everything he did, the Spirit of God led him to do. The Spirit of God led him to say. He lived his life, even though he was God the Son, he lived his life under full control of the Spirit of God, which is how you and I are to live true manhood. A man does what the Spirit leads him to do, even when, in his own rational understanding, he would do the opposite. And if you're going to live a life after the Spirit, he will lead you to do things that in your natural power you would never do. And if he didn't, it'd be easy to follow him. And the reason it's so difficult is because it's so unnatural to us. Masculinity is best expressed when you are here for others. You are to love your wife as Christ loves the church, that he gave himself for her. That is unnatural. It is natural to get all you can out of her. It is unnatural to give all you have to her. Your children, it is natural, okay, to become resentful of the little knuckleheads. It is spiritual, it is a God thing when you see yourself, yeah, I am the dad that keeps giving. I am the one who is trying to sustain, trying to improve, trying to increase the benefit of my children. Jesus understood this clearly, who he was here for. He was, the whole fulfillment of his life wasn't to live for himself, it was to live for others. He lived for us. He was a transcendent being. Now, I talk to you sometimes about the fact that my dad and my granddads, you know, had problems with alcoholism. They weren't faithful men. They weren't, and I don't want to be a transmission figure. I want to be a transition figure. Okay, I want to pass on a spiritual destiny to my children that has changed the natural order of our life, of our family. Okay, so that whole idea, that's living for others instead of living for self. When you live for self, then you don't think about how your actions affect others. You think about, oh, that's what I want. I've got the opportunity, I think I'll take it. Okay? That's natural. That's the first Adam. That's not what we want. So, D there, how do these two masculine destinies play out today? Well, unfortunately, in some pretty bad ways. Adam represents conventional manhood. And this is how most men, young men, are raised today. And I'm just going to, I've got five things, and they're not on here, but I just want to read them to you, and then we'll stop. The manhood of Adam focuses on what a man does. The manhood of Jesus Christ focuses primarily on who a man is. The Adam manhood is in competition with all other men. It's a competitive lifestyle. Whereas Jesus' authentic manhood is in community with all other men. Adam's manhood focuses on temporal powers, that's powers of natural powers of the earth, and Jesus' manhood focuses on a transcendent purpose. Adam's manhood is out for personal reward. He wants to be like God, remember? The day you eat of the tree of knowledge, you will be like God, knowing good and evil. He wants to be like God. Jesus' focus is on eternal rewards. I've come to do my Father's will. And the last one there, the conventional manhood of Adam, the whole focus is on to be successful. Whereas Jesus' manhood, the whole focus is on being significant. And that's a big difference. I mean, it's just clear as night and day. So as we talk about what it means to be a man, as we think about how we can become men, we will be talking more about that next week, defining the differences between Adam and Christ. The last blank there. The first Adam fell into passivity, and the second, the last blank on number three, back. Yeah, 3A. The first Adam fell into passivity. The second Adam rejected passivity. Rejected passivity. And, you know, I think sometimes we're too passive. We want it to be easy. We like to pass the buck. The kids don't mind because my wife's not strong enough. Or we never have any money in my house because my wife spends it all. Or, you know, we pass the buck when we got the man up. You know, so that's our huddle for today, guys.